Previously on Worlds Away.
I came across the crime scene where Lillian Gale's body was found.
I stand by my assertion that I think this is a waste of our time and a distraction.
I think we need to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. You should not be distracted, but I think we need to tug at the string a little bit more. I think I need to tug at the string a little bit more.
What do we think the terms of the new armistice should be?
My assertion is that we eliminate all of the Lustra-destroying devices that Aventine currently has. We should strike first, in secret, most effectively during the peace summit.
Are we violating the new armistice while it's still in the cradle?
Yes.
Why not just declare war? They're ready for it.
If we destroy their devices, they no longer have the upper hand. And if they declare war, the Verge will fight back. Aventine is prepared to fight Earth. It is not prepared to fight Earth and the Verge.
Mickey, I honestly should have expected you. I know you wouldn't miss something like this.
We should talk, catch up before the conference. I want to hear everything.
Have you ever encountered someone else in your landscape? Someone other than the subject of the session?
Sometimes when a practitioner would interact with the subject's expression, they might leave something behind, sort of like ripples in a pond. Sometimes these ripples were reflections of the practitioner, but other times they saw something else.
I walk directly up to Mar with a smile on my face. Welcome to the Verge.
Nolan?
I know you have to do this one, see it through to the end, but after the conference, after getting a piece, you're coming back home, right?
It seems like everything has happened so fast. I haven't really thought about coming home. I'd always assumed that we would finish out whatever tasks were required of us, but now, with the summit and everything, it's unclear what the future of the universe will be.
On the screen, we just see an anchor speaking directly to the camera, but the Chiron across the lower third says, sources, death of Aventine Consul to be ruled a homicide. Welcome to Worlds Away, an actual play storytelling podcast. I'm your game master, John Ossip, and here we've got Haley Daria.
Hello.
Lauren Wilbanks.
Bloodlust.
Michael Morales.
Howdy.
And Moshtara.
Blastoise should have been a steel type Pokemon.
Goddamn right.
Steel water or just steel?
Steel water.
Yeah.
He's the only starter in that generation who isn't dual type. He's the only one.
What was Bulbasaur?
Grass poison.
Grass poison.
Grass poison. All right, yeah. Even Venusaur was grass poison?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Damn. All right.
What does water steel, does that make you super, super?
It doesn't matter.
Like 4x weak to electrical?
You're 1x weak to electrical. Steel isn't weak to electrical. It's only weak to ground and fire and fighting.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Shout out to our boy Napoleon.
What's our Napoleon?
He got done dirty too, but that's a rant for a different time.
Yeah, shout out to our boy, Empoleon.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Do we want to do this again?
No. It's fine.
You know how we'll bravely said, never mind, I'm shutting up? Please go, John.
Your maturity is appreciated. Mm-hmm. All right. When we last left off, several representatives of the Republic had reached Ascension Station in advance of President Lee's arrival and the start of the conference. So, Leela, we saw you meet with Miki Adeyemi, your mentor at the Sato Institute. And Mara, you met with Nolan Callahan, who is, of course, the CEO of Genesynth. We also saw Mar Elkin, who is President Lee's chief of staff and Nasir's sort of handler within the Lee administration, arrive to meet with you, Nasir. And in the final scene, which occurred during Mara's meeting with Nolan, we saw a news story citing anonymous sources say that the death of the Aventine consul was being investigated as a homicide. To give you a little more on that, if folks are following the story on their slates, I think you see a condemnation of the leaks from Kenzie Hooper, who is the inspector assigned to investigate this case on Ascension Station. Her statement said that it's irresponsible to release unverified information and inflame tensions in the lead up to the conference. But she also asked that anyone with information on Lillian Gale's death speak with her immediately. At this point, though, I think I want to pick up with Nasir and Mar, since I think we ended last episode with the two of you leaving the docks on Ascension and going somewhere to speak more privately. So, Mo, do you want to set that scene for us a little bit? Like, where do we find the two of you, and what does that look like?
So, I think we're in one of those diplomatic rooms that Mike has sort of used for private calls before, in that they're intentionally designed to have no recording functions inside. And I probably had asked Arno ahead of this if he had a specific booth he recommended as just like no recording. And I think we're casually sitting around in chairs around a table.
Is the space like pretty small or constrained in there then? What do we think it kind of looks like inside this room?
I think it's a private space, but I don't think it's big, right? Like, I don't think there's a lot of room to walk around or anything, but I don't think like we feel pressed, if that makes sense.
Maybe it's like those study rooms at university libraries and stuff, where it's like there's a table and there's a couple chairs.
I think if these rooms are also designed for people to call back to Earth, like maybe the ones that we've seen Orno in, I think we've described them as pretty tight spaces. So maybe it's like, those are the kind of like one person ones. And maybe this is kind of designed for those like group video calls, but it's like, oh, you're just using it yourself. So maybe you're kind of on one side of the table.
Can I add one really interesting quirk to that now that you've framed that way?
Yeah, please.
There's a little bit of awkwardness over there in using the room to have a conversation with the intent of talking to the person over there, and that the directionality of all of the furniture is like facing towards like the screen. So you kind of have to like turn yourself awkwardly to have that conversation or just sit facing forward, not really looking at the person you're talking to.
Yeah. So I think maybe we can cut into the middle of the conversation. And as the kind of first line that we hear, I think Mars says to you, Nasir, this conference, it worries me. There are too many variables.
I couldn't agree more. I think that, frankly, if we had had an alternative, I probably would have taken it. But it seemed from where we were sitting, the options were start a war, continue on a course barreling towards it, or throw something up to slow it down. How is the president feeling?
At first, I think she was upset. But over time, I think she came to realize that what you did after Lua was enough to save her, and that this is a continuation of that. Your press conference, though, the information that you gave, that fit a narrative that the public can understand, brought back a fear of what got her elected in the first place. This is something else. If we don't succeed at getting a treaty, or if that's not something the public on Earth will accept, you know that there will be another war on the verge, Nasir. And I think what has the president worried is, unless we find these devices that Aventine's been making, it's a war that we're almost certain to lose.
I'm glad you bring up the devices. As the summit continues, the members of the Minerva Project are going to need to maintain a certain degree of impartiality, at least outwardly, all the while moving us closer to an agreement that will remove these devices from Aventine's hands. In order to do that most effectively, I need to understand where we are relative to Aventine, and if we are operating from a position of strength or weakness. And then, I think to anyone who knows me, what you would see on my face is like a look that appears deferential, but that doesn't quite reach my eyes.
Interesting.
Because I'm trying to ply information out of Mar with my next words. I know you obviously can't tell me everything you know, or everything there is to know in the administration. But in order for the Minerva Project to guide this towards an Aventine disarmament and stop the LDDs, I need to know where Earth stands in its capabilities to eradicate Lustra. And I'm actually going to invoke one of my moves here.
Okay.
I know that Mar would never tell me if he had the information at all. Right? Like, not if, I'm not saying like if he had it, Mar would or wouldn't tell me. I'm saying no matter what amount of information Mar has, he will only ever present it to me as though he has all the answers. And so I am playing a little bit on his ego on this idea that, like, I know you can't tell me everything, but we need the answer. And for the first time, the campaign, I think, I want to use well-connected.
Okay.
When you work your connections at a location to gain information or acquire supplies, roll plus slick. On a 10 plus, you find someone who can get you what you need. On a 7 to 9, it's not so easy.
All right, we'll go ahead and roll plus slick, and we'll see. For some reason, I feel like you've used this one time before, but it's certainly an early time. But go ahead and give it a roll plus slick. We'll see what happens here.
Really should have warmed up the roller beforehand.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's ice cold.
Oh,
she's ice cold.
Damn, bro.
I have a plus 3, so that is a 6. That is just a fail. Jesus.
All right, well, we got it out of the way early. Go ahead, mark XP.
On a critical roll that
You sounded really cool setting it up.
It's like when you say the title in the show. Oh, wait, no, that's not.
I
we're not
hate this roller so much. And I now have the statistical evidence to show that it dislikes me.
Yeah.
I thought our stats showed it was pretty even, Kiel.
Oh, no. Our stats as a collective show that it's even.
Oh, it's your stats. Okay, correct. Interesting.
It doesn't like me. That's okay.
All right.
Fair enough. Mo was actively hate listening to our show again, and he's got some eye-popping results.
The fact that you were like tabulating the dice rolls here, that is an act of self-punishment that I wouldn't have undertaken, but we salute you.
The craziest part is like I needed a 4 to succeed and I got a 3. That's like
no, I mean you needed a 4 on the dice. All right. And what did you say exactly? The last line was you need to know like where we stand on this. Is that right? And the thing you're trying to get at there was if Earth has these devices or kind of what, how they stack up in this arms race, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think he says, you know as much about this as I do. The device that you recovered on Feronia, that you sent back to Earth with the fleet, that's the only functioning equipment that I'm aware of. That said, there are other risks at play as well, including that with this conference, you'll be subject to more attention. Is there anything I should be worried about with you and with...
He's currently working with us. Every active member of the Minerva Project, including Director Green, is aware of the situation and monitoring it. There is one other thing, and I'm going to hand him my slate with the blackmail information. I notified Ramon Herrera, and he is maintaining his normal behavior within his apartment, and also set to try to discover who this is.
I think when he gets to say, I think we just see him kind of flipping through it, and he says, "Jesus, Nasir, why didn't you tell me?
You were on Earth. There was very little you could do. Now you're here. It changes the situation." And then I think in like full suck up mode, "I'm very glad you're here, Ma. Things have been more chaotic than I could have anticipated. I didn't expect him to be here when we landed, and he was just here. And this thing has spiraled out of control, and I don't know what to do."
On the information that you showed him, that included the request to disclose the information about the location of the device, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. I think he says, "This request, did you do it? Did you tell them?"
"I told them the device had been sent to the Sol system. They knew it existed and that it was in Republic hands. It didn't really matter where we sent it. That was months ago. At this point, it could be anywhere in the galaxy." Which, by the way, that last sentence is true. I told them like a true fact. I told them a verifiable fact. By the time they even asked us where they'd sent it, it had been long enough that it could have made it to Earth and been sent somewhere else. Like, I was never worried about sharing that we sent it to Sol.
"I'm going to have to make some calls. You do understand, Nasir, that Earth having one of these things is the only thing that might give Aventine some pause, and their knowing its location puts that at risk. You're right that it could be anywhere, but Earth's also the best place to study this thing."
"Aventine is still of the belief that we have more of these devices than they do. In fact, it's the only reason I think they haven't already launched a war."
"This blackmailer, have you heard anything else from them? I can't imagine they'd just let this go after you've already shown a willingness to do what they ask."
"I haven't heard a word. You should know I've read in the rest of the team, Director Green and Mateo, on this. They're all keeping their eyes open."
"You're putting a lot of trust in somebody who plays for the other side."
"He put his life on the line and defied Aiden Kyros to verify our story and put everyone back in their corners. We would already be at war if it weren't for him."
"What are you going to do next about this?" And he points to the slate.
"Frankly, as soon as I hear from them again, I'm going to come to you." There's one other thing I want to ask Mar for.
Okay.
And I just don't know how to do it. I was looking through my moves. Oh.
Moves?
Did you take sex appeal? No, you didn't.
I did. I mean, we could fuck right now, but...
like, you know why I came to this?
We need all of the information we can get about who our allies on Aventine are for this conference. If we don't have any information about the devices, is there any way you could get someone released into our custody?
Oh, shit.
Are you referring to Shaw, just to be clear?
Yeah. I mean, his crimes are only against the Republic.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the president could probably get him out.
Didn't you just fail a roll?
Yeah, he didn't get that.
He absolutely did fail a roll.
Yeah, yeah, and I didn't get a very critical piece of information we need for this peace negotiation.
Yeah, I think I don't know if you get to roll again. Let me think. Hold on.
This is a total, I want to name, this is an unrelated second thing.
Yeah, that this is completely unrelated second thing, which would be super cool.
That's true, but the consequence of the fail, let me think, hold on.
The consequence is everlasting, Mo, sorry.
Permanent debuff to luck. The consequence that I interpreted was that I had lost the ability, like Mar had lost trust in sharing information to me. Maybe I was wrong about that.
But there's a specific reason for that, and that's like you're too close to Mateo right now.
Right, I agree with that. I hear that, right? That came across.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of how to respond to what you just said. I might let you roll again, but let me think.
Second hard, second failure.
No.
God, okay. If you fail again, we're throwing you into the abyss.
Embrace eternity.
I'll go back to my request that they change the code.
I think I will let you roll again for this, but I think you have to roll manipulate, and I think it's with disadvantage as a result of you failing the last roll.
Mm.
That's so valid, John. That doesn't mean I'm happy about it, though.
That is that's 10. Pretty good.
That is a 10. Excellent. 4 plus 3 plus 3. So with disadvantage, a full success.
Good job. Yay. You get to stay.
Where was this on the first one? This why?
This one's way more interesting to me personally.
I know. So. I thought of this one on the fly. The other one I was like prepared for. I was like, I know what I'm going to ask Mar for.
And the dice knew.
The dice reward roleplay. They don't like pre-planning.
No. All right. Here's what I think he says. What makes you think he'll want to help you?
Oof.
I think above all, he wants to keep peace in the Verge. He seems to have a soft spot for Verge planets.
Maybe that's what got him in there in the first place.
I don't doubt it. And I don't think that just anyone could handle them. But I think if you're the one who gets him out, well, you're quite persuasive.
We can't do anything now before the president arrives. But once the conference begins, quietly, I could make arrangements. Before that happens, you have to get him to agree that he'll help you. And that he won't try anything funny.
Lieutenant Hines has built a rapport with Director Shaw since he's been imprisoned. I'm sure he can get him to agree to behave.
I think the scene ends there, but I think we just see Mar looking at you with a look of pretty grave concern on his face. So after that scene with Nasir, what is everyone else up to?
I think that Mara and Arno need to have a more expansive conversation about what their secret mission might be and to maybe continue the conversation that we started last episode in the ward room.
Yeah, I think so, but I don't think we're together yet. I think I might be getting ready to meet up with you, but right now I'm in a viewing area watching all of the delegations from the Verge come in. And what he's taking note of is not necessarily who the main representatives of each planet from the Verge are, but who have been sent with them as their attachés. Are they sending, security or defense individuals to go with them? Are they sending diplomats? Are they sending other leaders from their planets? And I think what he's trying to get a sense of is where their head is at, but based on who they've sent.
So then is Mara, are you kind of like looking for Arno? Or are you doing something else and think you meet up at some point?
I don't think I'm like going out to look for him. I think I'm staying pretty well confined to the ship.
Got it.
Maybe in the wardroom, kind of we talked about all of the reviewing of information. Probably just doing that in the meanwhile.
That makes sense. What about, maybe we'll kind of cut around a bit then. And what's Leela doing?
I think Leela has some stuff to reflect on. So I think she will actually be indexing or in her own landscape.
So maybe it makes sense to start with Arno and kind of describe this scene of him looking at the ships coming in, and then maybe we'll cut back and forth and eventually get to the conversation that you wanted, Lauren. This viewing space, Mike, where do we think that is, or what does this look like? Can you just describe it kind of physically a bit for me?
This might just look like there's a glass wall or something to that effect, and Arno standing behind it as folks are coming in, and it might not be directly connected to the terminal or something like that. You can just see people that are coming in. This might be an area normally designed for like families or people who like work together to like see people coming off the plane, that sort of thing. Okay. And what you just see is Arno in a Minerva Project jacket with his arms behind his back observing.
This was giving me like a lot of airport vibes. So
if I can add one detail to that, I think as Arno is sort of tapping information into his slate about like who's coming and showing up or like, and who they have with them, I think you can just sort of like cut to the wardroom of the Valiant and just our simulation is like updating in real time with his notes.
Okay. So no shit. Actually, for real, I was thinking that before the session started that was going to be the case. And I never communicated that to you at any point in time. That is exactly what I want.
Same identical wavelength.
That's really funny.
And so like, it's like the number of scenarios in the upper right hand corner is like 63 million. It's like reducing like by orders of magnitude as he puts in the actual answers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think what we see is you kind of typing into the slate then, and you know, maybe you have a very, you know, I don't want to hit the rules too much, but a calculating look and are kind of very focused on that task. But I think your vision kind of shifts to the right. And, you know, maybe the camera is kind of showing you from the side here. And I think we see also in this waiting area, maybe they're like seated in a row of chairs. That's kind of these like uncomfortable airport chairs. But we see a young girl, maybe 8 or 9 years old, with medium tan skin, sort of shoulder length black pigtails. And she is wearing the same kind of augmented reality glasses that we described on Feronia at the spaceport there.
The metaverse.
Oh, my favorite side character. Oh.
Do you remember her name?
No, I don't.
Mia.
And I'm sorry, I just see her coming through. Does she notice me?
No, she's not coming through. She's like sitting in the same waiting area that you're in.
Oh shit. Okay.
I think if you were kind of focused out the window, she's behind you and to the right. Like maybe you see her in the reflection on the glass.
Mia, why is it that every time I see you, you're alone in a heavy populated transit area?
She's a numbtot.
I also love that question from Arno to a child for two reasons. One, it's so Arno coded that he would just come out and say it. But two, this child probably loves the fact that you're asking her a hyper specific question.
I think when you say that, she just kind of lazily slides forward and lifts the glasses up. And she says, I needed a place to play. And the more people around, the more there is to do, usually.
And your parents are all right with this?
I always come back when I need to. My mom's busy anyway. She's one of the delegates here. When she decided to bring me along, I didn't realize space was going to be this boring, though. It's nothing like the Hollow shows.
They never accurately depict just how long you're bored waiting to get somewhere, do they?
I think she just kind of nods at that.
So, what's your mother's role here?
I think the same as everyone else, representing our planet here.
Delegate from Feronia.
So your mother, the delegate, is letting you wander around Ascension Station unsupervised just before one of the most high-stakes summits in the post-war era. Does she take this laid-back approach to her negotiations as well?
Get her ass! Get her ass!
Yeah, make this child uncomfortable. Do it!
Yeah, it's the child's fault.
Bully this child for their mom's actions.
Cry.
To our audiences at home, that wasn't the vibe Arno was going for.
Yeah, I think I was definitely trying to make a joke more than anything.
At a child's expense.
Because what Arno doesn't want to do is interrogate the kid, but he does want information. And so, like, I think he's trying to balance, like, the fact that she talks to him because he seems amusing more than anything else.
I think what she says to that is, she's not going to like that I came here, but I think she knows I'm responsible. And I think she kind of abruptly changes the topic, though, and just kind of, like, keeps talking continuously and says, back at Jarvis, I guess I was wrong about you.
How do you mean?
I said you can usually just tell when someone's a hunter, but with the four of you, I didn't know.
Well.
So did you think we were hunters or not?
Not then, but everyone in town said you killed it, the monster. In the pictures, it didn't really look like a monster, though. It just looked sad.
Yeah, get him! Get him! Guilt trip this man!
Yeah, this thing killed, like, several people.
Leela feels so vindicated.
I think Arno exhales slowly, and his demeanor softens, and he says, it was.
I think at that point, you're actually interrupted, and you hear a voice say, Mia, there you are. And a woman kind of walks forward and actually picks up the girl and sort of spins her around briefly. And I think she almost, like, instinctively laughs at this, and both of them are smiling. But as she puts her back down and you get a better look at this woman's face, you see a kind of sterner look, one of recognition as she looks to you, Arno. And this woman, who looks like a 50 years aged version of the girl in front of you, says, I hope she wasn't any trouble for you. You know, kids are always running around, but Mia's always been a real explorer. I think she kind of rubs her daughter's head when she says that.
Not at all. She lightened what was otherwise a very monotonous task. But if she's going to wander around Ascension Station, and I think Arno reaches into his back pocket and hands her like a security card of sorts, and just says, if you run into any trouble while on Ascension, if you show this to anyone from the Republic or from the Minerva Project, they'll help you out.
Friends?
Arno loves this little girl.
That means John's going to put her in danger by the end of the arc.
Damn right.
She's a ghost.
Mike is intentionally in danger.
She's a ghost, y'all. She's already dead.
The friendlier I get, the worse the situation will be.
Yeah. Shaw's also dead.
It was landscaping exercise the whole time.
Four Seasons landscaping.
I can't believe you hadn't made a Four Seasons total landscaping joke yet. It's kind of shocking, actually.
You're fucking welcome.
I think she takes the card and pockets it, but then says, I appreciate the gesture, but I think it's important that we maintain some independence, Lieutenant Hines.
Independence, of course. Well, I hope you won't need it, but the offer stands. I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
I think she kind of shakes her head as if almost like to scold herself for being rude and not having introduced herself in the commotion. And then she holds out a hand to you and says, Kiyomi Pratt, though most people call me Astrid.
Astrid, it's a pleasure to meet you. And I'll take her hand.
I have questions.
No.
Why do most people call her Astrid?
Yeah, how is Astrid a nickname for Kiyomi?
Yeah, me and Haley are on the same page. I was like, wait.
You have to ask.
Mike, are you going to ask?
No.
God damn it.
I'm just going to respect how she wants to be referred and go with it.
Yeah.
Ally. I get it. But like...
He's not a true ally. If you're a true ally, he would get us the tea.
I think she politely shakes her hand and then says, come on, Mia, we should really get going. And looks back at you. And I think you see like a smile on her face, but I think you can tell Arno is kind of, you know, she's putting this on and feel it's like a forced smile when she looks back at you. But then she walks out of the sort of seating area.
I turn back to face the glass and I just write down some notes about that encounter that go back to the boardroom.
I'll give you one more thing. I think if you go and look at the glass to write down, I think you can see the reflection in the glass, right? And that's how you first noticed Mia in the room, right? And I think you see this woman, maybe like Mia looks back at you, you know, kind of still, despite her assessment, like still positively, or like at least kind of curiously. But I think you see this woman like studying you and almost like, I don't want to say glaring, but like intensely looking back toward you through the reflection of the glass.
I'm not going to give her any indication that like I know that she's looking.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Arno never would.
She's looking at that butt.
That's a quarter off them cheeks.
Leela, if we find you in your landscape or indexing, where do we see this occur? Is this in your quarters in the Valiant, or are you somewhere else, either on the ship or on Ascension?
I think it's in her quarters, just because I don't think there's anywhere else that there's an expectation of privacy that would make sense. So yeah, I think we find Leela in her cabin on the ship. And she's got her metronome out ticking, and she's kind of sitting with her eyes closed.
Yeah. So maybe we like see the camera kind of pans across your face with your eyes closed, sitting in her quarters. And then maybe we see the same thing inside the landscape. Mm-hmm. And are you just staring at the wall or at the mural? Or what do we see Leela doing inside the landscape?
So I think we see Leela painting on the wall that's usually reserved for other, like for the subject's painting, and not on the wall that's her mural. And I think Leela does this when she's trying to work through something, but she's not ready to commit to it yet, because something that goes onto her mural kind of feels maybe more permanent. And right now she has a lot to think about. So just processing what Mickey told her of basically people might leave imprints behind when they change someone's mind. And there's just a lot that she's not sure about.
Can I ask, in terms of what this looks like in the landscape itself, are you painting representations of these scenes, or what does it look like in terms of what you're physically putting on the wall?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think Leela is, she's still working through it. It's kind of studies from different angles, perhaps, or different styles or ways of representing the same thing. So there's like a version of Nadia that's unconscious, and then there's like a version of her that's up and about. There's maybe a version of the child that's shrouded. Maybe there's an image of what we've seen the ghost ship look like. And so just all of the different kind of representations of the same being. So both Nadia and the aliens, all of the different ways that we've seen them, the idea is just trying to work through and, you know, understand, or what is the closest or the right representation that makes the most sense to her.
So I guess my question for you, Leela, is if you're painting all these images and you're trying to work through what Mickey said, I mean, is there anything that you're trying to determine through this, or what's Leela trying to consider or get out of her time the landscape?
I think up until now, Leela was very convinced that what she experienced was, you know, the echo of this alien's presence in Nadia's mind. I think what's interesting about what Mickey said is that we know that in certain circumstances, you can leave behind like the sort of echo or whatever of yourself in someone else's mind. But that's also when someone's expression is modified, you know, so it does sort of support her understanding of what she saw. But it also brings into question, like, okay, like, was the alien trying to, or did it successfully change Nadia's mind? It calls some things into doubt, perhaps. I don't know that she's necessarily, you know, saying, oh, turns out there's no aliens, JK, because obviously the ghost ship itself is this other evidence of something else going on. But I think she's trying to determine, is there something else going on, or was my initial impression like still accurate?
Interesting. So I guess my question then is this something that you would want to roll for as a player?
I mean, I think it makes sense because I really do think it could go either way, where I could see Leela kind of taking this as evidence of, well, yeah, see, you can leave echoes behind in someone's mind, or like, oh, was Nadia's mind kind of tampered with more than I realized? And is like what I saw kind of like more complicated? So I do think, you know, it's reasonable to come away with either. So it makes sense to maybe let the dice decide.
So I don't know if you have a move for this per se. You do have Sages as the background, which does give you advantage whenever you try to pierce lies, confusion, or mystery.
Yeah.
So I think I would allow that, but I think the rules otherwise scope it out, unless you can think of anything else that would apply here.
I guess I was thinking about Into the Abyss.
Oh.
When you stare unblinking into the abyss, looking for forbidden or forgotten knowledge, roll plus alien.
Huh. That does sound more right to me, actually. So, yeah, I think maybe go ahead and roll plus alien.
With advantage, right?
Yes.
All right. This is big. So that was a 7 on the dice. I mean, that's already a 10.
Yeah,
so.
You don't. Do you need to?
I don't need it.
I mean, you could bump up those success numbers, but.
So Into the Abyss. When you stare unblinking into the abyss, looking for forbidden or forgotten knowledge, you roll plus alien. On a 10 plus, you're shown dark visions that lend you insight. You can ask the abyss one question and the abyss will answer. But then I'll ask you a question from the abyss stares back.
Yeah.
So before I ask my question, what's your question for the abyss?
So I can ask any question.
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, it's got to be, was it aliens?
Yeah, I mean, I think a different way to put that would be,
it was aliens.
What is the nature of the being I encountered in Nadia's mind? I.e., was it aliens?
And before I answer that, what is Leela painting that is representing this question? Like, what do we see is the last thing that she's putting on the wall here?
I don't know if this answers your question, but I was thinking that at some point she's going to come to a conclusion and is going to then make modifications to her mural. And that's like what's going to feel more permanent. So I think maybe the question is, which of these elements she likes or that fits.
So the idea is like, which of these things is, are you going to move from one mural to the other?
Yeah, yeah.
I think what happens is you go and you look at the crossroads on your painting, on your mural. This is always kind of the central feature, right? It was this idea of the crossroads. I think what you're seeing is the similarity between that and the choice that Arno made when he was copying the imagery that you had shown to show the inside of Nadia's landscape.
Okay.
And I think that the crossroads starts to look like the maze.
Okay.
And I think that what you do is you add the child to that maze. And I think that the conclusion you reach from this is that the being you saw inside the maze, that was a reflection of the being that left that image in Nadia's mind. And not of someone else.
Okay. So it wasn't someone else like incepting that image in her. It was the being that left it.
Correct. I now get to ask you a question. And that question is, in what way is your character's mind and soul vulnerable?
I think Leela is someone who
connects with people. That's her job, is understanding people. And she is good at it. But it also means that she feels very distant from everyone. And a lot of that has been exacerbated by the mission, being physically isolated from everything she's ever known, being subjected to everything, you know, the difficulties of life in space and on different planets, the lack of a true confidant, the fact that she's increasingly feeling like she's holding on to a lot of secrets, and I think the lingering kind of lack of trust between the other members of the party. So I think all of that has magnified the sense of loneliness and maybe disconnection that Leela's been dealing with.
What does that look like on the mural?
I think as she has repainted it to look more like a maze, I think before it was clearly like one figure that represented herself, but there were other figures depicted kind of nearby or in other kind of half-formed representations. And I think as it has become more of a maze, it's become increasingly clear that those were not other people. Those were just parts of the maze. And that, in fact, there is like no one next to her as she's facing that split in the maze.
I think I'm going to give you one more thing on that then.
Okay.
I think as you're finishing the maze, do you remember how back when you first opened the door into Nadia's mind, and before that, when you were indexing with Ruby Watson and she threw the paint at the wall, that you thought you saw text in the art, that there was words that appeared inside the painting?
Mm-hmm.
So I think as you're putting the finishing touches on this maze, I think there's a lot of dark color, right, to represent what you saw inside the maze, right? I think it was stormy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for a second, it's as if the lighting, like in the painting, this doesn't make any sense, but like that storm is continued inside the wall itself, right? That the lighting is changing on its own.
Mm.
And I think when that happens in the hedges, you can see text appear. And before I'd mentioned that the text that you last saw was the words "dreamt and made incarnate gaps in time and space." And I think you see that text continuing. And maybe at this point, Leela, you recognize, if you didn't already, that these are words from the poem Howl, which was the book that you selected as your kind of favorite back when you first experienced indexing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at this point, I want to cut away to Mara. So, Mara, are you in the wardroom still on the Valiant?
Yeah, I think that's where I am at.
And what's Mara been up to in that space?
I think, again, she's always been an over-preparer. So I know I've kind of said this a few times, but definitely she's been running through the lists of people, the complicated web of politics and what the Minerva Project can offer or coerce, and what she as the CTO of Genesynth can facilitate, and how much that'll piss off Aventine or how much that'll piss off the Republic. I think she's thinking about all of that, and she's definitely thinking about the conversation that she had with Nolan.
And maybe to put a timeline on this, maybe this is happening, this is kind of your last steps of preparation before the final delegates arrive. And so maybe people are kind of getting ready, and that might be a reason that, you know, we see Arno back on the Valiant, maybe sort of getting prepared for this. So what do we see as you enter the room, Arno?
I think Arno's looking at his slate and trying to review the notes that he took and organize the information more than anything else, because he was watching everybody come in all of his notes had been written in sort of like a shorthand that he'd developed over the years to where he could write down thoughts without having to look at the tablet. So he could watch things or look at something while taking notes and wanted to reorganize it so that other people could digest that information, maybe in table format, maybe as a spreadsheet, that sort of thing. And he spent the time walking from the terminal to the Valiant and just reorganizing all the information. So it's translated from his shorthand to something that's a little more readable and digestible. But you see him walk in and I'm not really sure.
I think Mara looks up and maybe you see kind of a few different expressions go over her face. At first it's, okay, Arno's arrived, back to work. And then maybe a furrowed brow. And then maybe it's like she's weighing something in her head. And I think she finally looks up and says, "You're acting strange. Is there anything you want to tell me?"
Stranger than usual?
Or maybe unstrange?
Well, that's strange.
Yes, we can't have that. We especially can't have that if we're about to fly off and destroy an independent government's clandestine cache of weapons of mass destruction. We should have everything on the table. She kind of like half smiles in maybe a sarcastic way. And then she goes, "Oh, wait, here." And hands him a pin. And Arno will recognize this as the stylized Y in the Genesynth logo. So it's difficult to explain over a non-visual medium, but it's essentially DNA being zipped apart.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's what we've kind of invented for ourselves. A verbal trademark, TMTM. So she kind of slides that across the table to him.
I think he picks it up and muses, "You know, I was starting to feel like a weight was missing from my Minerva project jacket." And he'll just put it on around his lapel. I think he puts it on over his breast where you would normally see just a military badge of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
For what it's worth, we did establish that the jackets do not have lapels.
Yeah.
Thank you, lore keeper. I think Mara will kind of openly muse and she'll say, "I brought this box of pins with me. I don't know what they told you about what this trip was going to be, but I thought it was going to be much more photo ops, handshaking, maybe a fake groundbreaking or two. These seemed like the perfect little gift."
"No, the fleet doesn't quite have anything like this, I'm afraid. Everything I was told was classified, but I suppose declassified now."
Boo! I think she'll let him have that one. Genuinely the most organic.
"So, tell me, what's so strangely unstrange about my behavior?"
"Well, your end of the discussion, when we decided to infiltrate the," and she throws up the air quotes, "terrorist organization." "And also in the group conversation we just had, it just seems like you're much less interested in direct confrontation."
I think Arno relaxes at that and says, "I think that you and I have looked at the same set of facts and come to different conclusions. And that might be because of some of the gray areas in what we're trying to do. I'm comfortable is not the right word, but prepared to engage in conflict as I've done in the past as a member of the fleet, because I was doing so in my role as a member of the fleet. My purpose was well defined. We were in a war. My actions and my goals and my purpose were clearly defined. Nobody was surprised to see a soldier in a war zone. But here, on a civilian mission, as a member of, let's call it a diplomatic cadre, I think that if the purpose of our mission was to build trust in the Verge, and we've been successful to this point acting the way that we have transparently, then the action that we're about to take will use that trust as a currency. And you all are assuming that the rest of the Verge will agree that what we've done is right, acceptable, and then continue to support us. I don't think we get to decide how the Verge reacts to our actions, because we are about to do something outside of their expectations of us. And they're going to be at best surprised and at worst feeling betrayed. And so I think for someone like Nasir, who values himself so little that he would throw his everything away at a moment to get just one inch closer to his goal, it's easy to say that this is what we should do. But for everyone else, I wonder if the full weight of the situation has been fully appreciated. And so I say to you again, as I have this entire time, are you prepared for the consequences of our actions?
She definitely takes a really long inhale. And it's like too long.
Mm.
And it's like she fills up her whole body with air, and then she tries to take like a few more breaths on top of it. And then she lets it all out. When I agreed to work on the propagation problem, I thought it could work. Part of me thought it could work. But there was a very large part of me that wanted to engage in a futile struggle. We didn't solve the problem because I'm exceptionally brilliant or talented. We were incredibly lucky. And if I'm being honest, I was very prepared to have made a decision to spend my life working in vain at a problem that would never be solved. You know much more than I do about belonging to something bigger than yourself that has, at the very least, mixed interpretations. But this time, I want to do this. I want to struggle for peace. And I don't feel like this time I'm punishing myself.
Okay. Then let's go over the plan. Hey there, it's Mike. Thank you so much for listening to Worlds Away. It's been an absolute blast making the show and inspiring so much future fan fiction. If you're enjoying Worlds Away so far, you can help us out by spreading the word to friends, family, and coworkers you corner at the water cooler. We're relying entirely on word of mouth to advertise, so this is the number one way to help support the show. And if you've already talked about us to everyone you know and want another way to support us, you can also rate and review us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other platform you use to listen to podcasts. You can also give us a shout out on social media on most platforms at Worlds Away Pod, or at our website, worldsawaypod.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the episode.
So at this point, I want to skip ahead to the summit. Before we do that, though, is there anything else that we see the four of you doing before that conference begins?
Yeah, I would like to visit Shaw.
Oh, yeah. We got to cash that check.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you want to meet Shaw, Arno, you can do that. But I'm going to put a twist on that, which is that I think that in order for this to go unnoticed, which was one of Mara's conditions, I think that that is going to have to align with when the last of the delegates, including the president, are scheduled to arrive. And that way, this is sort of the least likely to attract any media attention. And so I guess my question is, with that condition, are you still interested in meeting with Shaw? And then if the answer to that's yes, did you tell the party that that's your plan and that that's what you're doing?
I think yes to both questions. And I think it's because Arno is willing to trust that whatever happens at the start, they can handle it without him.
So I want to do the bigger scene first, and then we'll cut away to Arno and Shaw. In terms of what we see, I'm imagining this as the scene where all the representatives are converging for the start of the conference, and that this was timed for when the last of the delegates are reaching the station. But aside from that, I want to turn it over to you all and ask what we think this scene looks like, both in terms of where on the station this is and just what the setting and the atmosphere are like.
So I think it's important for the summit to not just feel like it's being hosted by the Republic. And so I think the venue has to be chosen super, super carefully. I know we said that there is a section of Ascension Station that is like specifically Republic buildings, and that's where the Minerva Project headquarters are. So I would say it's not there.
Completely agreed.
Yep.
I wonder, what do we think is the space that's like neutral where this could be?
And I'll also just say, I don't think this has to be in only one space. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think there's different parts of this conference that could happen in different spots on the station. And this is kind of the more like the start to the conference. So whatever that would look like.
Mm-hmm.
I think to Haley's point, it definitely can't be in Republic space. It has to be neutral ground. And I think we've mentioned before that the only real green space on Ascension is the park that we come back to a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if that's the case, if it's the only green space, it has to be neutral ground. And I think it's probably also, and I'm making this canon right now, so somebody stop me, probably where Ascension was like dedicated. And like where they were like, you know, the quote unquote groundbreaking was probably in this green space.
I like that.
Huh.
You've also mentioned, John, that there's a memorial here to people lost in the war on all sides.
I think specifically like what we saw was a memorial to like the people of the Verge, right? That maybe to the side of the park. And it was kind of off almost in a corner, like at a place that was not as obvious, right? There was these sort of memorials to people that didn't fight in the war, but the sort of the civilians who were lost in the Verge, and that was where Sasha's family was listed.
Then I think we are standing just off to the side of the memorial to launch this event, so that like if you are standing in the crowd, the memorial is directly to your right, and like there is no shot of the stage, the very lightly raised stage, that wouldn't include the memorial.
I guess then another question, just to kind of set the space, are there like seats or sort of assigned spots for each of the delegations? Like, what does this look like in terms of the setup then that the sort of crowd is seeing here?
I have a pitch to you on the seating for the delegates, because I think that the very obvious play and the very safe play would be to just keep people that are like together in certain places. I think that what we should try to do instead is like figure out what the degrees of tension are over here and put people that like mildly disagree with each other, have like the shortest gaps of disagreement with each other, like next to each other, to have some sort of conversation. And even if it's tense, like let it start off there. Let them be uncomfortable.
And by that you mean the delegation from like a very pro Aventine planet might be near like a pro Republic planet or something.
That's
like
right.
That. Is that what you mean?
That's right.
Oh, interesting.
To that point, and to put Earth and Aventine right next to each other, right at the front, I think that we seat them from front to back in order of colonization by humanity. And so I think if you're facing away from the stage, to your right is the Earth delegation, and immediately next to them is the Aventine delegation, and then the Libera delegation. And it just goes it's about humanity, not about any individual planet.
Interesting.
Let's friction them up.
Fuck yeah.
So I think if that's the case, in terms of the delegates, I think there are probably several people who are either already there or are trickling in when we pick up with that scene. Some of them are from planets that we haven't visited yet, but there is also a few faces there that we recognize. So sitting in the seats for Satis, so maybe that's in the sort of like right side of the first row, maybe just before the second, we see Herman Eastling, the chair of the council there, along with Randall Lawrence, who is the head of security. And to remind us what they look like, Herman Eastling is an older man with pale skin, a wrinkled face, and sort of short, wispy gray-white hair. And Randall Lawrence is a far younger man, maybe early 40s at most. And he has dark brown skin, a bald head, and a short, neatly trimmed beard. We also see at the seats for Feronia, the woman Astrid that Arno saw earlier, the woman whose daughter you had met on Feronia. And I don't think that any of you had seen her before this, but maybe you got a description or other information from Arno as he was kind of tapping into his slate. Looking around the room, though, there may be other people that you sort of recognize from your studies or things that you could learn from the situation. But I think if we want to explore that, I'm going to want somebody to roll some dice. And so it's up to you on if you want to give that a shot or if you just proceed with what happens next.
I'm going to ask the bullshittiest question I've asked on mic. Who has the best scope it out roll?
I have a plus +3.
Girl,
I also have a scanner.
Yeah, you're
which
scanning.
Gives me advantage.
Facial recognition software.
I actually don't think that the scanner... maybe... Let me see. Let me look at the scanner. I'm wondering if that could help you here.
My scanner was specifically about being able to pick out people in the crowd because I used it.
Environment, organism, or device?
Right. The question isn't like... In my head, you should just get advantage. I'm going to stop talking. Let's give her advantage. Let's go it out. She's been studying.
Yeah, I've canonically said that like Mara has been doing an excessive amount of studying. She's hyper prepared and she's
that's
got
fair.
her Google Glass shit on and she's looking right. around.
I think that's fair. Go ahead and you can roll scope it out with advantage. Do mark the scanner and mark one use though.
Yes. So to be clear, I'll be rolling 3d6. I also have a +3.
We failed this one before.
You couldn't even let me finish. My whole preamble. Okay, whatever. Take it. Fine. That's fine. Fuck, just gonna I'm fucking rolling. Okay, 5 and a 4 is a 9, +3 is in fact 12. A 12.
All right.
Ooh.
So for scope it out, when you take time or use sense of equipment to closely study an object, situation, or person, maybe I'll give this as people, you enroll plus calculating, and on 10 plus, you can ask 3 questions to the list.
Ooh.
Let me get there.
This is just really interesting, like, because we're specifically trying to figure out what's going on with the people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be, opportunity's got to be one of them, right? Who or what here could be a useful opportunity?
Yeah.
What's my enemy's true position? What should I be on the lookout for? Who's really in control here? How can I best, all of them?
Yeah. Farts.
My favorites... are useful opportunity and true position, like enemy's true position and useful opportunity. But I think any of them are good.
I think I'm going to overrule you and I'm just going to be, what should I be on the lookout for that mm-hmm. one? The kind of vaguely enemy-ish, but in my opinion, it's a little broader than that, right? And then I think who or what here is not what they seem.
So good.
You get one more question, Lauren.
Oh, maybe I didn't say the final one. Sorry about that.
All right. And that's what could be a useful opportunity?
Yes, those three.
Okay. I think I'm going to just like give you some stuff in what happens here as a result of this. As I was trying to think of like how to like play this out and give you these opportunities, but I think I'm just going to kind of like say what happens or who shows up. And then I think the opportunities will kind of be clear from that. So in terms of what you should be on the lookout for, everybody is kind of, I think, taking in the other delegates, right? I think that that is like what you see in the crowd as what people are most focused on. The press is there, right? And there's other people observing this. And you know, I think there's some attention on the Minerva Project, but the, you know, the delegates are, you know, these are the leaders of these planets. I think there was some mystery about who was actually going to show up in all the cases. Like, Aventine has kept this kind of a big mystery. We know that President Lee's coming for Earth, but this is all kind of what is the focus of attention here. But I think there's one person that you notice that's kind of, maybe it's intermittent, but is focusing on you all. And that is this woman, Astrid, the one that Arno met in the docks. And you see her looking at the three of you, recognizing who you are. Like, I think the sense is that you get, Mara, is there's something more going on here than just the conference.
Hmm.
In terms of a useful opportunity, I think there's one other person that you recognize. Maybe she's seated not as like one of like the top delegates, right? So maybe this is why this person didn't show up in your research. But actually, in the seats for reserved for Lucina, you see a woman that you recognize as Annika Quayle.
Oh, the dress lady.
Yes. Yeah. So this is the woman that you met in the lobby.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe that's what you should look out for. But no. This is the woman that you met in the lobby of the hotel on Eos. So this woman in her late 50s, just kind of pale skin, long red orange hair. You know, I think the elegant vibe continues. I think maybe what she's wearing here is kind of straddling the line between what's acceptable for a business meeting and something you'd see more at a gala. But she's kind of in the back behind other delegates who, you know, you recognize from your lists as more of the politicians on the planet. Mm. But you see her there. I'm going to get to who or what here is not what they seem, but I actually have one other role I want you all to make first. And that is, Nasir, I'd like you to roll act quick for me. And I just want to name outright that this is not something dangerous and is more for a narrative point in terms of both what the success is and what the consequences are. But I'd like you to roll that for me and we'll find out what the result is.
11.
And 11. Oh, that's full success. Okay.
Not on the important ones, just the fun ones.
No, I think this is good.
You just rolled a 10. Don't be greedy.
I've had two full successes. And I got an XP. I'm not mad.
So as I answer this, Nasir, what are you focused on in the crowd here? What are you kind of trying to take in as you observe the room?
I think there's probably three things. Number one, I'm looking for any obvious signs of Aventine support, right? Anyone who's like adopted Aventine cultural practices, dyed fingers, etc., right? Number two, I am looking for if there is anyone that is truly shocking in the crowd, like anything that's like surprising me. And number three, I think I'm probably looking beyond the crowd to the press line and seeing if I see anything happening there that would make me nervous, since I think we're about to take the stage and give a speech.
So I think looking around the room, I'll just answer that some of those questions. I think looking around the space, you see, like, nobody has the dyed fingers, right? I think that practice is Aventine.
Yeah, it's super, it's completely Aventine, yeah.
In terms of other practices, you know, we've talked about, like, I think the physical culture is, like, the thing that they talked about is permeating the Verge. And I think there is a division, like Herman Easling pulls out his slate, right? That's what he is writing on. But I think you see that several of the other delegates, including Annika Quayle, are writing on some form of pad or paper, right? Maybe it's like books. You know, this is kind of an event that they would bring their best to. And I think that's what you see in terms of the physical culture. I think your mind goes to your time on Aventine, and it's kind of like, almost like thinking in a world where like the slate isn't as much of a thing, right? Like imagining this experience of how you would write and carry yourself on a day-to-day basis where communication lacked that omnipresence. But I think then you notice a buzzing sound in your pocket.
I check my slate.
When you check it, you see that there are three missed calls, all from Mateo. And also a message, though, that was sent to you. And the message says, "Just trust me, Nasir. I promise I'll explain everything." Do you try to respond, or what do you do with this?
I send back a message that says, "I trust you."
At this point, I think there's some commotion by the edge of the park, and we see several other figures start to walk toward the seats. The first that you see is a woman with pale skin, brown eyes and short bleach blonde hair brushed over to one side. Instead of a real suit, she has a white blouse with the collar extended over a brown jacket. And as she walks over to the seats reserved for the delegates, the three of you recognize her as Katia LeClaire, administrator of the Consus mining operation.
We fucking love a diva, a real diva.
We stan a corrupt queen.
God, I was so happy when she was mean to us.
Yeah. I think we see her kind of look around the room and like take it in. Maybe she just kind of stands there and she locks eyes with the three of you. But then I think we see maybe like a puzzled look on her face as she sees the three of you there and maybe absent a fourth. And then she sits down in one of the chairs. But I think as this is happening, the press is not really paying her much attention. Because instead, they're congregating around a larger group walking in. And at the front of this group, we see President Evelyn Lee. I think she's giving like the politician wave to the press and also kind of polite head nods of recognition to the delegates. But she walks straight to the three of you and extends her hand.
Mara shakes her hand.
Same. I'm not going to snub my boss.
Yeah.
I will shake Evelyn Lee's hand, President Evelyn Lee's hand, and when I do, I will also make sure that I, like, point to her seat, mm-hmm. right? So that, like, it would look like we were directing any delegate, right?
Huh, interesting.
It's a motion as she, like, walks up. And I think I'll also, like, smile very warmly, and then I'll say, I trust you had a safe flight, Madam President.
I think she smiles and then kind of leans in and is like, you know, it's this like conversation that's muffled that other people can't hear, but just looks like you're kind of bullshitting, right?
Right.
But she says, when I sent the four of you here, I can't say I imagined this would be the result. I might have appreciated more of a heads up, Nasir.
Yeah.
I promise you, madam, if we had had more of a heads up, we would have given it to you. welcome to the Verge.
So I think we see you say that to her and kind of escort her to her seat. And this is like a huge photo op, right? Like the press is surrounding you. And this is this event of, you know, Nasir Evelyn Lee, her first time in the Verge. You know, obviously Earth is one of, if not the most influential players of this conference. And, you know, especially with the Minerva Project calling this, you know, this is seen as maybe like one of the main events of who's arriving. And, you know, we see you taking her to her seat, and that's where all the focus is. While this is happening, though, I think we see somebody sort of more subtly arrive and try to come in through the back, almost as if to avoid getting noticed. But as they move through the crowd, maybe you look up, Nasir, and you recognize her as Reeve Kasarek. And I think we see her smile at you. But then she sits down, takes a seat, not at the delegation for Aventine, but rather in one of the chairs that's been reserved for Eos. Before you can react to this, I think we see the reporters all kind of shift focus, though. And we see someone walk almost like directly to the front of this crowd. And he does so with purpose and determination. This man has light tan skin, very dark, almost black hair in a part to one side, amber eyes with a hint of wrinkles under just one of them, and a mid-length stubble highlighting the bottom of his face. And though we've never seen him on camera before, all of you recognize this man as Aiden Kuros, First Minister of the Commonwealth of Aventine. He walks into this space in the park with several people trailing behind him in Aventine uniforms, and it looks as if he's just walking directly to his seat and is going to sort of proceed there wordlessly. But then he sort of stops like extremely suddenly and just stands still and lets the press start to surround him. And then he begins to speak. Our consul, who was sent to Ascension in order to keep the peace, is dead. At this point, we know that this was not an accident. Our representatives will work alongside the authorities here to investigate her killing, but make no mistake, with or without their help, we will identify the cowards who are responsible for this crime, and we will bring them to justice. Now that said, given recent events, and he stares right at the three of you.
Yeah.
Our galaxy has seen too much mistrust. And I would like to prove that Aventine, along with all of the independent people of the Verge, is dedicated to a path of peace and of tolerance. In that spirit, I would like to introduce the person who will be helping me lead our negotiations here. Someone proven to value peace, and now our acting consul to Ascension. And from the side of the crowd, wearing his Aventine uniform, you see Ramon Herrera, now Aventine's acting consul, walk forward with a serious look as he goes to shake Aiden Kuros's hand.
Back.
Arno, where do we find you?
I'm waiting for Shaw. So there's a visitor's area.
Is this the same room that we saw before?
Yeah, I'm waiting for Shaw in that same room where we met the last time.
And just to remind me, this was the room where there was the sort of like tacky art of the solar system on the wall. The one with the I think we described it as like the pale blue dot photo.
Yeah, yes. No place like home.
No, no place like home. Yeah. I know that you said you were waiting for Shaw. I think actually we cut in and like Shaw is already there. So maybe you were waiting for him, but I think when the camera enters the room, he's there.
How does he look?
He looks hollow.
Damn, that's a downer.
And I think he's in the chair kind of directly under the art.
Woof.
What's Arno saying?
You don't look well.
Classic Arno.
You look classified.
That was nothing.
It really wasn't.
Pipe down.
I think when you say that, he stands up and just like turns his back to you actually and is like staring into the art. And I think he says, "When you went to the park, Arno, did anyone see you there?"
"I don't think I was followed."
I know that you haven't said anything yet about what you're there for, but I actually want you to roll manipulate now.
Oh, jeez.
Because I think that's going to dictate how this entire scene goes.
But no pressure.
This is a plus zero. We're just raw dogging this roll. All right.
A 9!
Okay, we'll take that.
Solid raw dog there, babe.
I was a little overexcited. I'd like to apologize to everyone who will have to hear that.
We're going to come back to the 9 in a second. And this, what comes next is not going to change that result. But here's what I think happens. You said you didn't think you were followed.
And to clarify, that is what Arno genuinely believes, yes?
Yeah.
So I think what happens is he says, "You don't think?" And then I think he lunges toward you, Arno. What do you do?
I think just like with Nasir on Sadis, I let him. And I don't do anything to try to stop him, dodge, or react. And I just say, "Lillian Gale was Scion." And I exhale.
I think he's like pushing, like almost like pushes you up toward the wall. And it's like wild, his voice. He says, "I trusted you, Arno. I trusted you. And look what happened." And I think as he's saying that, maybe the door opens and two uniformed guards come in because they like saw that this occurred and are pulling him off you. Do you kind of like gesture to them, or what do you do in response to this?
I do. I just say, "I've just given him terrible news. Please let him have a minute to compose himself."
I think he's, we hear him just kind of like heaving, like that's the sound of his breathing, right? But eventually he kind of calms down. I think the guards like look at him and then look back at you. And I mean, maybe you like nod and they kind of leave him. And maybe actually I'll say one other thing is like in the skirmish, I think the glass like covering the art got cracked.
Damn.
Okay.
And I think he's kind of in the corner, like opposite it. And I think he just says, What did you come here for?
I'm going to pull out my slate. I'm going to put it at the table facing where he would have been sitting as when I came in the room. And I'm going to say, this was Sion's last message. And I'll wait for him to react.
And just to clarify what's on the slate, this is the information about the facility.
Yes.
I think it takes him a while, like maybe a full like 20 seconds, maybe longer even. And saying that out loud, that doesn't feel like a long time, but I think sitting in silence for that long, it kind of feels like an eternity. But then he walks over to the table and it doesn't even look up at you. He's just looking down at the slate. And I think you just see him kind of flicking through it.
If we were on the brink of war before, I'm worried that there might already be nothing stopping us. And I'm worried that the Minerva Project is going to be the one that sparks the flames of war this time. We received that intel from Sion and plan to neutralize the devices that currently exist and the facility that produces them. And we plan to do it during this summit.
I think when you say that, we just see his eyes look up from the slate toward you. And they're bloodshot. Almost like feral. Manipulate. When you use promises, guile, or charm to manipulate someone into doing what you want, say what you want and what you're willing to give, and then you roll plus slick. On a 7-9, they can make a counter offer to be settled now before they do what you want, or they can ask you to promise something and provide concrete assurance that you'll follow through, and then they'll do what you want. He pushes the slate back toward you, and he goes and bangs on the door to summon the guards. And before the door opens, I think he says to you, Arno, I've lost everything in this, Arno. I've lost everything. I don't know what you're asking for. I don't know how I'm supposed to help with this. And I think when he says that, the door opens. But if you want anything from me, you need to find whoever did this, Arno. You need to find whoever did this. And the last thing we hear is the sound of a heavy door slamming shut.